From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Leo Tolstoy famously wrote that every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. In Alice McDermott's latest novel, After This, the Keene family's sadness creeps in quietly through a narrative in which intrigue and mystery grow out of the simplest details of daily lives. This is Miss McDermott's sixth novel. One of the previous ones, Charming Billy, won the National Book Award in 1998, and this one is published, as all of her novels have been, by Farrah Straus and Giroux. I'm very pleased it has brought Alice McDermott back to my show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And this book follows a family from the end of World War II up through the Vietnam War. Were you thinking of the war in Iraq and what's been happening to American families as you were writing it?
I couldn't help but think of it. I have to say, up until I wrote After This, I always advocated the ivory tower for novelists and was of that school that believes the work itself is the work itself, and whatever was going on in the writer's life or the writer's time should be irrelevant. And I suppose to some degree I still believe the work stands on its own.
But, well, the family life here is more important than the politics and the
war
in Vietnam,
too.
Except that it is part of the story that you just can't escape.
It's very much there, yes. And having written this novel, probably began at some time around 2000, and have writing it through up until 2006 and through all that we were going through as a nation. I had the sense early on that do I have to write another novel about the tragedy of young men lost in war? And I think the Times convinced me that, yeah, we need another novel to remind us.
So that's part of the plot, but it's also about things that we associate with the 60s but don't seem to go away: sexuality, drugs, unwanted pregnancies, abortion. I guess these are the things that will be with us forever. Maybe were with us before the 60s.
Yeah, my first impulse for the novel was to somehow explore the idea of family as our first shelter. Shelter from what? Shelter from the storm, as Bob Dylan might say. Shelter from whatever's going on out there in the world, natural, political, historical, the first place where we gather to offer comfort.
So you actually, many authors say that they start with an image or something. Yours was a thought about shelter?
Shelter, family as first shelter. And with the irony and the sorrow and the joy, too, at the heart of it is that family must break apart in order for other families to form. So even though it is our first place where we gather, where we seek comfort, it has the seeds of its own destruction within it.
So we have these six members of the Keene family, and we start with them with the marriage, John and Mary, and then what happens to the kids?
Right. Well, John and Mary meet right after the Second World War, as you say. He's a returned vet. She is approaching what she thinks is spinsterhood when they meet.
Which is rough for a young Catholic girl in the suburbs.
Exactly, exactly. And she's only about 30, so it's not as bad as she thinks it is. They meet, they marry, they move out to Long Island, the famous New York saga, and raise their four children there. The first scene that we see with them as a family is with a literal storm on the horizon, a hurricane hitting the island.
Now, critics often discuss how much your work leaves out. Is it important to you to leave the filling in of the blanks to the reader?
Yeah, I do feel what I love to do as a reader is to feel that I'm in some collaborative effort with a writer. reader's mind and writer's mind working together. So as a writer, I hope to offer the same thing to a reader, that if I can assure my reader as much as I'm capable of that every gesture has more than one meaning, every scene has more than one meaning, every detail, because I'm making this stuff up, didn't just happen, but has more than one meaning. If I can say that with some assurance, then I suppose I feel that I'm then free to ask the reader, so could you please pay attention to the details? Could you please remember them? Because then these things will fill themselves in.
Well, even the time frame of the novel is left for the reader to deduce at times.
Yeah, well, again, it's not...
You go back and forth.
Right, right. And I think it's important, especially when I realized that I was dealing with these decades that so easily fall into cliché and so easily become Time magazine cover stories about the Me Decade, the sexual revolution, all those easy bits of coinage that have been applied to these times. And yet these were the times that I was dealing with. And so I wanted to avoid too much sociological and historical fooling around and getting to the heart of how these characters live every day, often in spite of the times that they find themselves in.
Faith has been a factor in much of your work, but especially in this book. And you deal with the changes in the Catholic Church, both on the larger international level and on the local level. And on how much, whether faith makes life better.
Well, again, the times require. This was a time that the church was in a state of change, and certainly the difference in the way the faith was approached by that post-World War II generation versus the baby boom generation, speaking of Time magazine cover story phrases. But the way that the church changed at those times, I think very much was a part of the lives of these characters. At the same time, thematically, there's a motif that remains throughout the novel and belongs to each generation, and that is the motif of prayer. The impulse to petition, even on the part of a younger generation that has rejected the formal church, or even on the part of people who feel that the formal church maybe has failed them, there is still the language of prayer and the impulse to prayer.
Is that something that just comes out of having grown up a religious person, in your case, grown up in the Catholic Church? Irish Catholic?
I think for me it's a tool because I grew up in the church.
Because it also is something in Charming Billy, we have similar themes dealt with, although in a different way.
Yes, yeah, in some ways that's true. But I think it's also the Catholicism only gives a specific language to that impulse. I think the impulse to prayer, again, that sense of hunkering down, finding shelter, no matter what our religious training, I think our impulse is to ask whoever, whatever higher power, luck, fate, God, get me through this.
My guest is Alice McDermott, whose latest novel is called After This, and it's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. And you have brought a book along to read something for us?
I brought a book along. I'm just going to read the first couple of paragraphs, which open the novel. Mary Keene, just before she is about to meet her husband. Thematically, I think some of the things we were just talking about would certainly appear here. Leaving the church, she felt the wind rise, felt the pinprick of pebble and grit against her stockings and her cheeks, the slivered shards of mad sunlight in her eyes. She paused, still on the granite steps, touched the brim of her hat and the flying hem of her skirt, felt the wind rush up her cuffs and rattle her sleeves. And all before her, the lunch hour crowd bent under the April sun and into the bitter April wind, jackets flapping and eyes squinting, or else skirts pressed to the backs of legs and jacket hems pressed to bottoms. And trailing them, outrunning them, skittering along the gutter and the sidewalk and the low gray steps of the church, banging into ankles and knees and one another, scraps of paper, newspapers, candy wrappers, what else? Office memos, shopping list? The paper detritus that she had somewhere read or had heard it said trails armies. Or was it, she had seen a photograph, the scraps of letters and wrappers and snapshots that blow across battlefields after all but the dead have fled.
Alice McDermott reading from After This. And Alice, I have to tell you that if you had told me this was your latest poem, I would not be surprised. Do you think that way? Or is this something that, I mean, do you almost write it as if it were a poem? Or is this something that you just have gone back over 300 times to get it to be so perfect?
Well, both. But, you know, for me, again, as a reader, and I think most of us who write because we were first readers. Story is lovely, and I'm a sucker for story as much as anyone else. But story is everywhere. Story is in every newspaper. Story is on every magazine show. We've all got stories, anecdotes. It seems to me what literary fiction does is use language to somehow take us beyond the story itself.
So where does plot come from? Is it just a natural consequence of doing what you've been doing?
I think for me, because language is primary, that plot then arises out of the language itself. The selection of detail. One detail must have resonance, must have implication. And out of that detail, out of using language in many ways, the way a conjurer uses an incantation, hearing the rhythm of the language, hearing the rhythm of each sentence, selecting details, selecting gestures, and out of those details and gestures rise character. Out of character rises story.
In the past, if I remember correctly, you have at times worked on two novels at the same time.
Yes.
Did you do that in this case?
I did, and I think
I've
there was
a third how you can balance that
around there. I started this novel in somewhat different form around 2000. Took a break from it to write my last novel, Child of My Heart, which I began right after September 11th and wrote very quickly, and then came back to this and found, again, what was going on in the world was beginning to reshape it.
Do they develop a dialectic, the different books? Do they talk to each other?
Not yet. I guess I'll have a sequel when that happens.
But at times you don't have a problem of keeping track of where you are. Are you able to just get right into the book even though you've been working on something else?
Well, I mean, I don't have two desks. I'm not sort of ambidextrous turning from one to the other sentence by sentence. But
I've written fiction, and I know that the characters take over, at least at some point, and you hear them in your head even when you don't want to hear them in your head. Sometimes they don't go away. But I can't imagine doing that with two books at the same time because – I'd wonder who is talking at this moment and what is the story?
I'm not that adept. I think what it really is I'm just such a wonderful procrastinator that I like to have another book that I can sneak away to and sort of get all the joys of feeling that I'm procrastinating and yet still writing something.
And are you doing that now? Is there another one?
I am. I'd like to break the habit.
When you won the National Book Award for Charming Billy, most people thought that Tom Wolfe would win. he had written A Man in Full. Were you surprised at the time?
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
How do you hear something like that? Do they give you a call on the phone?
No. You know, National Book Award ceremony has gone quite Hollywood. So it's at a dinner and everybody's all dressed up.
I mean, you sat there thinking, not a chance for me, and then your name is called.
Well, I'd been through it. My second novel was also nominated. So I'd been through getting dressed up and going to the dinner and sitting at the table and being convinced that your name wouldn't be called. And indeed, my name was not called. and feeling my publisher, Roger Strauss, sort of patting me on the shoulder saying, it's okay.
Next
it's
time,
okay.
Alice.
Right. So the second time for Charming Billy at the dinner, all dressed up, I realized the first time that the winner doesn't get to eat his or her dessert because you have to go up and do press things. And the dessert looked lovely. And so when we got to the fiction category, I was sort of happy that I was certain that Tom Wolfe was going to win and I was going to get to eat this wonderful chocolate mousse. I didn't get to eat the dessert.
Had you always wanted to be a writer?
Well, I always wrote. It took me quite a while to, I think, get some sense that this was actually a career that I might have the good fortune of making a living at.
Had you already started raising a family when you began writing seriously?
Oh, no. I wrote from as long as I can remember, wrote stories and made up things and that I claimed were true. So no, I was writing all through high school, college, and had published my first book before I began to have a family.
Alice McDermott's sixth novel, After This, is published by Farrar, Straus and Giroux, and I want to thank you so much for coming by again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.